It's my season.
So what will you be thinking when you hear that the pick is in at 3?
We'll see what happens.
I'm trying to hate, I don't even see them.
Hey, Trey Lance.
The San Francisco 49ers select.
Excited?
Yeah, I'm so excited, Coach.
Trey Lance.
Welcome to the 49ers, buddy.
Dude, we're so pumped. So pumped, man.
It's my season.
Trey Lance, the man the 49ers traded up to 3 to get, giving up 3 first-round picks and a third-round pick to get there and assure they could get their man in moments. Hear what the 49ers CEO said today about when Lance will play. Plus, getting Aaron Rodgers may not be as expensive as you think. Are more teams actually in the mix if he does leave Green Bay? Welcome to NFL Live, everybody. We're here with you. We got these guys, Dan Graziano, Ryan Clark, Marcus Spears, and Dan Orlovsky. Let's get back to our lead story of the day. It's all about the 49ers and Trey Lance. And the conversation has been around, when will he begin to play? Will it be early on? Some have said, yeah, he needs to get out there after not playing much in his college career, get some reps under his belt. Others have said he needs experience. But here's what Jed York, the CEO of the 49ers, said today.
If he doesn't play until he's 23, but he's got a 15-plus year career, I mean, you know, there were rumors about a guy, and obviously Kyle talked about trading for Aaron. How long did Aaron sit? 2-3 years before he played? And again, I want to make sure that we do everything that we can to make sure that that position is the best it can possibly be in the NFL. We're trying to build out a team that can compete for a championship today and can compete for a championship over a period of time. If we are in a situation where Jimmy goes out and takes us to the Super Bowl again and has an MVP caliber season, there are worse dilemmas to be in. And Jimmy certainly has the ability to do that.
Jed York said that to NBC Sports Bay Area. So, Dan Orlovsky, we start with you. Is this approach where there's just not a whole lot of pressure on Trey Lance, even though they picked him at 3, just kind of wait it out and see if we wait a couple years for him to play? Is that the right approach?
I don't believe so, because I think Trey Lance needs to play. And Jed York referenced Aaron Rodgers in the years that he sat. Aaron had like 700 passing attempts in college. Trey Lance has had 318. So, if we look at him sitting for the next 2 years, hypothetically, per these comments, that's 4 years he goes with getting 318 reps in live game action playing quarterback. I just don't know how anyone can justify development. Like, when and where would the 49ers expect Trey Lance to develop? Because we're also heading into a time frame in the NFL where the offseason is significantly shorter than it used to be. And young players have way less time with coaches, both the head coach, coordinators, and their position coaches than they did years ago. So this, I think, would stunt his growth rather than expedite it. And the reality is this, Ruddy, like, if the 49ers were so confident in Jimmy Garoppolo, the player, they would have gotten a backup. They went and got Trey Lance because of the talent. They want him to be their starter.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. That's what I was waiting on, D.O. You're not taking this man third to sit down. Even Patrick Mahomes didn't go to 10th. Like, that's a big difference in the NFL draft. But you go take a quarterback third, you give away first-round picks, you move up in the draft, and Kyle Shanahan said, I am drafting a starter, period. Yep. So that is Trey Lance. That is the MO that he's going to go into this locker room with. Look, Jimmy Garoppolo was put on notice when they made the trade up to 3. Because we all knew it was going to be a quarterback. And I understand what Jay York is doing. You have to keep synergy. You have to plan for all of these things to possibly transpire. But the bottom line is, you didn't give away picks, trade up to see Trey Lance sit down for 2 years until you figure out if Jimmy G is a good enough quarterback to win you a Super Bowl. Y'all remember, before the draft, I said the San Francisco 49ers moved up to find a quarterback to win the Super Bowl, not just get there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Absolutely. And you know what? I can see it now. Jed York says 49ers new motto, we won't bust pipe nor make diamonds because we apply no pressure. Because that's basically what everybody there is doing, right? Jimmy Garoppolo saying all of the right things because he understands the position that he's in as a player. And now that you've drafted a quarterback number 3 overall, I'm just keeping the seat warm until it's his time. He did the right thing. And now you have Jed York saying something that made sense, right? We don't want to rush this guy. We want this guy to play when he's ready. And if he plays after year 3 and he's 15 years, all of that's great. But then he compared it to Aaron Rodgers. Here's what's different, Jed. The Green Bay Packers sat in the mid-20s, and Aaron Rodgers fell to them. They were smart enough to draft him. The quarterback that was playing in Green Bay at the time was a future Hall of Famer. In fact, he'd actually won 3 MVPs in a row. So let me tell you what things are not the same. Drafted somebody 3, drafted somebody in the mid-20s, that's not the same. Jimmy Garoppolo and Brett Favre, those things aren't the same.
Well done.
And never have I ever heard anyone say that Jimmy Garoppolo has had an MVP caliber season. Jed said, if he takes us to the Super Bowl and has an MVP caliber season, that works. That ain't who Jimmy G is. That boy needs to play.
Yeah, I mean, Jed said it, so I guess it doesn't really apply to never have I ever if you know how to play that game. One thing, too, I'll take it one step further, Ryan. He not only was drafted at 3rd overall, but they gave away 3 first-round picks to get Trey Lance. So the price was high here.
What
Let's bring Dan Graziano back in here for a little more context. Graz, why would San Francisco hypothetically be trying to show how much they love Jimmy G?
Well, they're going to need him. I think they believe they're going to need him, at least at the beginning. They're definitely, if they're going to end up trading him, it behooves them for everyone to think that they don't have to, that they like him. And Kyle Shanahan has been upfront about Jimmy Garoppolo and said, we feel like we can win with him. Look, the fact of the matter is the 49ers are 24-9 when Garoppolo starts. Like, whatever you think of him, when he has been on the field and played, they have had success. So they feel like they can go with that. So I think Jed York's trying to make a point about how young Trey Lance is and how that's a good thing. And, yeah, I mean, if Jimmy Garoppolo were to go out and win the Super Bowl and the MVP award this year and they had to wait on Trey Lance as a result, that would be a wonderful situation for the Niners. It's just not very realistic. As we're learning with another team, if Garoppolo wins the MVP this year, he's going to dig his heels in and refuse to play for the team next year, because that's what you're supposed to do when the team drafts a quarterback in the first round. Right?
So
jeez, you're so salty.
Roz got it in there. And by the way, coming up later on the show, we'll talk about Aaron Rodgers and why the price for him may not be as high as you think. Ryan, I'll give you the last word here before we go back to Graz for some news.
Well, listen, man, I think Graz is absolutely right. Like, he has a hold on the situation, probably all but the last part. I just believe that Trey Lance was drafted because of his talent. He was drafted because of his ceiling. And when you listen to what Dan says, it makes so much sense to me. This is a dude that needs reps. The only way to get better at playing quarterback is by playing quarterback. You gave up what you gave up to get him. You drafted him at three. Let him be your quarterback.
All right, Graz, let's go to our top stories of the day. We begin with the Broncos and their situation with their new quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, as a condition of the trade that sent Teddy Bridgewater from Carolina to Denver, is an adjustment, significant adjustment to Bridgewater's contract. He was supposed to make $17 million this year, of which $10 million is guaranteed. Now they've knocked that down to about $11.5 million, of which $10 million is guaranteed, and of which $7 million the Panthers are paying as a condition of the trade. But Teddy still gets his money and a chance to start in a place in Denver that he wouldn't have gotten a chance in Carolina. And other Broncos news, unfortunate news, their right tackle, Juwan James, suffered a torn Achilles. That'll cost him almost certainly the entire season. Issue here is that he suffered it while working out away from the team facility. And because of that, according to the rules, if they want to, the Broncos could designate that a non-football injury, put him on the non-football injury list, which means they would not have to pay his $10 million salary. So that's in jeopardy. And the reason this kind of rises to the level of big news this week is the ongoing dispute between the NFLPA and the NFL over these voluntary offseason workouts and whether players should refuse to go to them.
Yeah, Graz, you see the tweet on the screen there from Patrick Mahomes saying, so they're going to take his contract for working out in the offseason, that on the James injury. Understandably, a lot of players were not happy about it. Graz, I see you want to get back in, but we're coming back to you on the other side of this break.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. better because it has to be.
Just 6 days ago, the Panthers doubled down on their commitment to quarterback Sam Darnold by not selecting a quarterback in the draft. Instead, they grabbed former South Carolina cornerback J.C. Horn, who you see there with the eighth pick. Meanwhile, both Justin Fields and Mac Jones were still on the board, but for now they're riding with Sam. Here's Carolina head coach Matt Rhule on their thought process.
For us, when we got Sam, he's 23 years old, just turned 24. We just felt like Sam plus another player, would be better for the team overall. And I just believe in Sam. I believe that, he deserves the opportunity to go out and play with us. And I think those other young quarterbacks are going to be fantastic players. But, the hit rate on first-round quarterbacks isn't real, real high. And to have a chance to get J.C. Horn and have Sam Darnold, we just kind of felt like, hey, this is two for one.
It's worth pointing out that Matt Rhule does have a really long contract with Carolina. So there's some flexibility here in how he wants to plan going forward. I think that's key. But Marcus, do you like the fit with Darnold and Rhule for this Panthers team?
I don't like it. I love it. It is one of the better fits in the NFL. And if you think about Matt Rhule's history, it's not just about turning programs around. It's about a belief system. And we've talked about it. I heard Dan talk about it with a lot of quarterbacks. What is his psyche? How does he feel like his organization feels about him? This is the first step kind of reimagining Sam Darnold. It's talking about him in this way. We're confident in Sam. We think we can win with Sam. We felt like if we have Sam and J.C. Horn, we're a better football team. Sam Darnold has been through hell in New York. We all know that. Right. And I'm not even going to get started on the coach that he had, because it's not right to talk about a coach that's no longer employed. But Matt Rhule has shown the propensity not only to turn football programs around, he's shown the propensity to elevate players' play and give them opportunities that a lot of people wouldn't. He went and got Robbie Anderson from the Jets as well. Robbie had a phenomenal season last year. Maybe not a lot of people paid attention. This is the perfect situation for Sam Darnold.
Yeah, so the NFL is often about taking calculated risks, and the Panthers have done that with Sam Darnold. And if they hit, and I think they will, this football team and organization has the brightest and best long-term future within that division. Now, I'm going to take everybody inside, really, the off-season war room, so to speak, for the Carolina Panthers. Number one, why was Sam Darnold a disappointment or a failure in New York? Did we think it was because of Sam Darnold, or did we think it was because of the exterior variables, meaning the coach and the players? Obviously, Carolina thought the latter. They thought it was the exterior variables attached to it. Number two, given what Sam Darnold is as a talent, where would he rank in this draft class? Because as we sit at eight, do we believe that he is highly ranked or more highly ranked than a Justin Fields or Mac Jones who has fallen to us? Obviously, Carolina thought more highly of Sam Darnold than they did Justin Fields and Mac Jones. And then three, Carolina believes that talent at the quarterback position, which Sam Darnold has, coupled with talent that Carolina could have and put around him, Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Terrace Marshall Jr., if you take talent plus talent and support, you're going to be a really successful football team in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why I love doing TV with Marcus and with Dan. This is what OKC envisioned when they had Russ, James, and KD, right? You could just feed off. So I don't have to talk about the football parts, because both of those guys did that. But I do want to talk about this with Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule did change programs, but more than changing programs, he changed cultures, right? He changed the culture at Temple. For as far as I knew, it was an HBCU that played basketball because they had John Chaney. I'm just going to be honest. He changed that. And then you go to Baylor. We all know what a mess that school was, not just about the football program, you understand, but about who they were as people, how they progressed as young men. He turned them into a winning football team, and he changed the culture there. He is changing the culture in Carolina. He is placing belief in his players, whether new or old, and he's making people understand that we're going to go about having great talents, but also great humans that make great locker rooms that produce. And right now, Sam Darnold has gone from being with a coach that you couldn't believe in, not playing well, being cast off, to being traded for, to the quarterback that was there being traded away, and to a team having an opportunity to draft two young guys who people think highly of, but they chose me. That's empowerment. That's how you get the best out of people. And this is a great marriage for Sam Darnold. And for Carolina, you should be ecstatic that you have Matt Rhule.
It's really well said, RC. And I'll also say this. They've got an offensive coordinator that's one of the more talented in the league, even though maybe everybody wants to see what he has to prove this year. Joe Brady is going to have his hands on Sam Darnold.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Oh, the Buccaneers. Their defense shut down the Chiefs in Super Bowl 55, holding them to just 9 points on 3 field goals. But did you know this Tampa Bay defense actually had the second highest rate of snaps taken by first or second year players last season? They are young. 2019 second round pick Sean Murphy Bunting came up with 3 interceptions in 4 postseason games for Tampa Bay, matching his career total prior to that stretch. Everyone thinks it's about Tom Brady, but it's about that young D. Speaking of second round picks, Antoine Winfield Jr. made an immediate impact on the Bucs defense, starting all 19 games and logging the second most snaps. Jonathan Taylor was drafted 41st overall last year, but ran for the league's third most yards and most by a Colts rookie since Edgerrin James. Back to defenses. Carolina's Jeremy Chinn was the last pick in the second round, but was runner-up in Rookie of the Year voting behind Chase Young. So can any of this year's second rounders match that kind of output? Let's start with you, Matt Miller, our ESPN draft analyst. Give us a second round pick you think contributes day one.
Yeah, Laura, we got to go with the guy who was drafted early, the second pick of the second round. That's Elijah Moore from Ole Miss, now a New York Jet. He will be Zach Wilson's best friend real quick. It's the vertical ability, but it's also the quickness and speed underneath. He's going to be that safety valve for the New York Jets offense. He's also one of the few guys who can take it to the house every time he catches the ball.
Listen, RC, I'm going to step in your territory. For me, Trayvon Merrick going to Las Vegas, obviously they needed safety help, but it allows them to bump Abrams down and play more of a role roaming the line of scrimmage, similar to when Darren Wilson and Roy Williams were together in the, as safeties in the backfield. They needed secondary help. I think this will be an impact safety similar to what we showed with Chinn.
I'll say 2-2 Atwell for the Los Angeles Rams. This offense needed really one person to do two things. Be vertical juice down the field, and then somebody they could just get the ball to in a multitude of ways. If you think about the things that they do with Robert Woods in their run game, getting the ball in those jet sweeps, I expect them to major in that stuff for Tutu Atwell, and he's going to get 8 to 10 touches a game, both in their pass game but also in their designed run game.
Listen, I love Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. I was obviously fell to the Cleveland Browns because there was some things with his medical and a heart condition, but this is the dude that, to me, is the new age Will linebacker. He can play over the slot, he can cover tight ends, blitz, and he's sideline to sideline with his speed. I believe they got a steal in him. You implement him from day one. He plays in base package and also sub personnel. This is a huge get for the Cleveland Browns and that improving defense.
Yeah, and RC, they've said Owusu-Koramoah is healthy. Cleveland has completely revamped their secondary this offseason, rightfully so. They did allow the league's most passing touchdowns that traveled at least 10 air yards last season. The Browns added John Johnson, the third, and Troy Hill from the Rams in free agency. They drafted Greg Newsome with the second pick and 26th pick last week. They also welcomed back safety Grant Delpit, who missed his rookie season with a torn Achilles. That probably doesn't get as much attention as it should. Let's get Matt Miller back in here with Dan Graziano. Matt, how did you grade out the Browns draft?
Yeah, Laura, I think they had one of the best drafts of any team in the 2021 class. You have to give it an A. Looking at the moves that they made, being patient as well, letting the board fall to them, and then adding positions of need, but also positions where they just had to have depth. We talked about it all week leading up to the draft. The Browns don't have one true need. They didn't have a clear-cut on-paper area they had to address. So when Greg Newsome falls to you, you go get him, because Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams have not been exactly healthy at corner. And again, when you have someone like Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah fall to you, you draft him. Even if you have 4 to 5 linebackers you like, even if you had John Johnson, you get Grant Delpit back at safety, because Owusu-Koramoah could play a little bit of everything for you and give you some of that versatile matchup type defender, where we're seeing people like Isaiah Simmons do it. We've even seen Derwin James do it when healthy. So now the Browns have really an eraser at linebacker and safety.
Yeah, they addressed so many specific needs, but also got some do-it-all players. Graz, you had a chance to chat with head coach Kevin Stefanski at the start of the season. You think he judges these moves as successful?
Yeah, right before free agency, was talking to Stefanski about what they were planning to do. And, you know, he said last year the offensive line was the priority. This year the defense is the priority. He said, you know, we were eighth in offensive DVOA last year, and we think the offense will get better. 25th in defensive DVOA. If we just get that to sort of the middle of the pack, then I think we'll be where we want to get. And so they hit free agency hard on the defensive side of the ball, and that set them up, to Matt's point, to be able to take the quality player on defense as opposed to the need player when the draft came around. So, I believe the Browns are very, very satisfied with the way the offseason has gone and specifically the draft last weekend.
Yeah, there's been no doubts about the offense, right, especially knowing that Odell Beckham Jr. comes back and should be healthy. Let's talk about this with you, Marcus Spears, because when you look at last season, you weren't that high on the Browns, right? But now, as it stands, with what they did in free agency, what they've done in the draft, and the goals and needs that they addressed, where are you with Cleveland?
Dark horse Super Bowl contenders. You can make a hard argument that things go right and Baker Mayfield takes the next step. This roster can end up in L.A. in SoFi. But for me, y'all know, hashtag LOS, line of scrimmage. And that's what Cleveland went out and did. We could talk about Chubb and Kareem Hunt. We could talk about all of these weapons that they have on the outside, Baker making a progression. We could talk about Stefanski play calling. They win at the line of scrimmage. And go and look in the history of the NFL, for as much as we love offense and to spread people out, if you don't have people that can block them and don't have people that can get after the pass and stop the run, you're not going to win games. And I know it's a generalistic term. I know it's cliche, but the Cleveland Browns went back to the drawing board. That's why we're having conversations about them like we are right now. It's not about being high power, 50 points a game. They dominated at the line of scrimmage, and I plan on them dominating again this year.
I mean, has anybody had a better offseason than Andrew Berry? I mean, you think about going out, getting Johnson and Hill to add on the back end, getting Jadeveon Clowney for a deal, right, at the right price. Then he had his baby right before the draft and has an amazing draft. You add Owusu Koramoah, you add Newsom second. And so now you have all these pieces that fit. And if you're a Cleveland Brown fan, you have to be thinking to yourself, who is this team? Who is this team that has identified who they are, how they attempt and how they want to play football, how they can be most successful, and then acquire talent to fit that? That is what they've done. And to me, they propelled themselves in an argument with the Buffalo Bills to be the team right now that's going to be most hotly contested or the biggest competitor to the Kansas City Chiefs. And if Baker Mayfield takes that next step, if now you add Schwartz and you have a deep threat, and Odell Beckham Jr. can go out there and win one-on-ones, which we all know he can do, but he's just a part of the offense. This is going to be the team to beat the AFC North and maybe the entire AFC.
No cap. Listen, I consider the Browns to be a lead dog. You see it? I consider the Browns to be one of the lead dogs. I think this is a top three roster in the AFC. I think it's a top five roster in the NFL. RC, you touched on those secondary guys, and I just want to give an offensive perspective, because if you say the two teams that they needed to go hunt down were Buffalo and Kansas City, well, we know those teams have just a ton of weapons on the outside, right? Like, you got to make sure that your fourth guy can cover my fourth guy. And now they've got that. Right. They've got really six guys in the secondary that you feel really good about. But I actually think the biggest offseason pickup could be their third-round pick, Anthony Schwartz, out of Auburn. You know, when we talk about this pass game, it's going to be so predicated on the play-action pass. RC, you know this. When I have speed, a guy that I can get the ball to, first of all, and give him a reverse, and he's got the chance to take it 60, that changes the way a defense is going to set up their play call. When I've got vertical speed down the field in the play-action game, what it does is it forces everybody on the defense to get deeper than they really want to, right? Because you've got to acknowledge and respect the opportunity for the ball to go over your head. So what that does is that speed pushes all those, that last level secondary deep. The play action pass, the play action fake, brings that second level closer to the line of scrimmage. So what Anthony Schwartz is going to do is just create those chunks, create that back, that gap to be bigger in their pass game for Landry, for Odell, for their tight ends. I think his impact is going to be tremendous.
I think this is the crazy thing, and listening to Dan talk, I'm thinking to myself, where is the hole on the Cleveland Browns? right? If we're going into a week, who do we attack and where do we win? And what they've done in the last 2 years is build this team to a point where you're going to have to defend both when you're on offense and defense because there's playmakers all over the field. And that's a place we haven't seen the Cleveland Browns with a coach we now believe in.
Yeah, guys, just to that point, the Browns haven't repeated as division champs since 1989. Kevin Stefanski was 7 years old then. That's also about when we taught Dan what no cap meant.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Our girl Mina got her wish. The Ravens took Rashad Bateman. I guess they listened to her. What will he be able to do for the Ravens that previous draft picks could not? Over the last 25 seasons, just one receiver drafted by Baltimore has registered a 1,000-yard season for them. That was Torrey Smith in 2013. The Ravens have also selected a league-high 8 wide receivers since Lamar Jackson's rookie year in 2018. Ravens offensive coordinator Greg Roman talked this week about changing up the scheme this offseason.
There's definitely some things that we're doing right now to evolve, and definitely some things people are going to see from us that they haven't seen before. Our staff is working really hard and diligently on that for this upcoming season. But I think when you really look at who you have to beat in the AFC these days, you got to have talent everywhere. There's some really good teams out there, and I really feel great about what we're building here. So schematically wise, though, we're always going to change a little bit. And I'd probably say more so this year than we did last year.
Come on, Greg, tell us more. I get it. He's not going to give away his entire scheme, but I'm excited about this. Because, Dan, how many times were we frustrated by the predictability in the Ravens offense? They would literally run the same play on first down in the first half. It wouldn't work out. They'd do it right again in the second half. Yeah. So what do you make of them deciding to change their scheme?
Yeah, actually hearing Greg Roman talk about it, I'm okay with it now, Laura. It's a little off script because – initially, when I saw some of the quotes, I got like, hold up. There's no need for you to change who you are. Nothing is broken. There is nothing that needs to be fixed. My kids will come to me all the time and be like, Dad, this toy's fixed. No, it's not. You just need batteries. But hearing him say, yeah, we need to evolve, that hits home to me because he's correct. Because I think the Ravens have such a phenomenal foundation within their offensive scheme. Obviously, it produced an MVP, and it's the leading rushing attack in the NFL over the past couple years. So there's that is exactly who they are and who they should be. And they should continue to push the ball down the middle of the field for Lamar Jackson. That's who they are, and that's who they should continue to be because he thrives in it. Now, the evolution, the added things for him, because this is what Lamar does so well. You're seeing balls down the middle of the field. He excels in this with Mark Andrews, especially down in the red zone. Red zone, when he can be matchup-based, he gets some shallow crosses, pushing the ball down the hash. But this is where they need to grow. Now, this is not a Lamar thing, folks. This is an evolution of scheme thing, pushing the ball outside towards the perimeter. One, you need to have more plays that do it. That makes sense. You need to have more plays that push the ball to the outside that look like your plays that push the ball to the middle of the field. And then two, you need to have human beings that can go make those plays on the outside, okay? And so that's what I do like hearing from Greg Roman, using that word evolution, schematically and personnel-wise.
You know what's crazy is that when we get in the heat of the game, we become who we are. Think about the first 10 or the first 15 scripted plays. We see so much motion from teams. You see play action. You see misdirection. And then we have to become who we are as the game pushes forward. And you mentioned, Laura, you mentioned Dan showing us this play was called the first snap of the first half. It was called the first snap of the second half because that's what he knows. That's what he feels. So he has to rely on these players. You have to see Rashad Bateman do some things, Tylan Wallace do some things, Sammy Watkins, and when you figure out what things they're good at, that's how you make Lamar Jackson better. That's how you call plays in a better fashion. And so now, if we know Rashad has a matchup we can win, let him go win that matchup, but scheme him up into it. If Hollywood Brown has a matchup he can win downfield, get to that. And I think that's what the Baltimore Ravens and Greg Roman have not done. They revert back to, this is all we can do, this is all we are, this is all we're comfortable with. They have to get more comfortable with these new pieces that allows Lamar Jackson to excel.
All aboard. All aboard. Last call for the evolution train. I've been trying to scream it, holler it. I've been trying to tell Greg Roman. I've been telling my counterparts. Just evolve. Just add some more elements to this offense. But I want to go beyond that, y'all, because, look, y'all, both of you guys know football as much more than I do from an offensive standpoint when it comes to the passing game. But the thing that I saw with the Baltimore Ravens is the way they were running the football, it really was an easy scheme for defenses. It was just the physicality. Mm. It was the Lamar Jackson effect that added the extra. I would have loved to play the Baltimore Ravens in a phone booth because that's where I like to live. But now they're going 53 and a third.
Right.
And if they add that element with that man that they have at quarterback and that ability to push the ball downfield, y'all, this offense can be the best offense in the league. Because of Lamar Jackson, and you're using the entire football field. I believe that's what evolution means. I don't believe you get away from what you do. I don't believe you get away from what makes you great. I think you just add. You continue to add. As we get older, we got to add to be better parents. We got to add to be better in whatever situation we're in.
True.
I think that's where the Baltimore Ravens are headed. I love to hear Greg Roman say that.
Yeah, you still don't have to add that much to Lamar Jackson because he is already so great.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back on NFL Live with the top story. The air around Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers is thick with drama after Adam Schefter's report last week that Rodgers wants out of Green Bay. If you're from the South, you may know about a 7-layer cake. This thing's like a 17-layer cake. Here's what Brett Favre thinks.
Knowing Aaron, and I think I know him fairly well, if he has a grudge, whether it be against the organization or a player or an arch rival or family, friends, he ain't budging. I don't see him coming back and saying if it's not resolved, or if, even if it's resolved, but he feels like they got one up on him, he ain't gonna play. Knowing Aaron, he would sit.
Let's get ESPN Packers reporter Rob Domofsky in here. And Rob has an all-encompassing article on the Packers-Rodgers saga on ESPN.com right now. Check that out. One thing I found interesting was the potential trade value of the quarterback. Rob, you've had the chance to reach out around the league. What are you hearing about the potential cost to acquire Rodgers?
Laura, let's not bury the lead here. The Packers still say they're not trading Aaron Rodgers, and they're committed to him to be their quarterback in 2021 and beyond. But that didn't stop me from asking around the league what kind of trade value that Rodgers would have. One NFC high-ranking personnel executive told me that it has to be two first-round picks and a second. Now, if you're the Packers, that may sound good on paper, but they have to remember this. Whatever team they send Rodgers to most certainly will win 10, 11, 12, 13 games, which means that those draft picks come, Laura, at the end of those rounds.
Now, Rob, it's really interesting. Marcus, you heard that. Two firsts and a second actually sounds kind of reasonable for Rodgers, right? We thought maybe it'd cost a little more, Marcus.
That's easy. Listen, I'm on the phone, and maybe you add more teams to the pot that didn't think they had a chance. But the bottom line is, I believe it's going to take more. I respect it. I understand it. But I looking at the situation, understanding that Aaron Rodgers is who Aaron Rodgers is, I believe it would take more than two ones and a second-round pick. But also it's complicated, right? Because you got to also, as a team, know that Aaron Rodgers is fully committed to coming. Like, the trade situation is really convoluted. It's not as simple as saying, hey, let's pick Denver for Aaron Rodgers, or let's pick the New Orleans Saints for Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers also has to feel like that's a place he can go and win. So it's, and no trade, he does, I, correct me if I'm wrong, he doesn't have a no-trade clause, so he can't choose where he wants to go transactions were to take place. It's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic with Aaron Rodgers because it's ugly in Green Bay, and teams are salivating to figure out whether they can get him or not.
Well, listen, I was all prepared to try to buy Aaron Rodgers at the resale price, and we just found out we could win him on the sneakers app. And all the sneakerheads know exactly what I'm talking about. So I'm fired.
I never get the sneakers on that app.
Right now. I'm fired up right now if I'm an NFL team.
I have absolutely no idea.
If I'm the New Orleans Saints, it's okay, Dan. Hey, just stick with no cap. You got one for the day, you want to know. And so, like, if you think about all of these teams that are trying to get a quarterback or who could use an Aaron Rodgers, right, which is everybody whose quarterback's probably not named Tom or Patrick Mahomes, if you are feeling that that's what it'll take to get Aaron Rodgers from the Packers, you have to wonder what the Packers are thinking, though. Do the Packers give up Aaron Rodgers for that price without getting the right players back, without getting the right compensation to move on from him in the way that you would have to? So to me, this got even more interesting now because it makes me feel like more teams could be in play. Do I still feel like Denver is huge? Miami is huge? Absolutely. My colleague Marcus mentioned the Saints, and oh my God, would New Orleans love to have it.
Yeah, Mina Kimes is somewhere like, but they actually have no cap. That's a real usage of no cap. All right, Graziano, let me ask you this. When you think about a comparison for trying to move Aaron Rodgers, is there somebody recently, a quarterback that was moved, that we could try and look at as an indicator of how this would go?
Oh, sure. The Matthew Stafford trade, right, to the Rams was for two first-round picks, a third-round pick, and Jared Goff. So you think to yourself, if Stafford can fetch that, certainly this is not an unreasonable price for Aaron Rodgers. It's just, it's more complicated because, you know, you talk about the Saints. Well, the Packers aren't going to want to send him to an NFC team if they can help it. And you talk about who would be in the market. Is it Denver? Is it the Raiders? Is it Miami? You know, you'd have to trade your next two first-round picks. You're selling out the entire next two or three years of your franchise on the bet that you're Aaron Rodgers away from a title. And the Packers can tell you that having Aaron Rodgers does not guarantee you a title, right? So that's kind of the crux of the whole situation. Plus, you got a 37-year-old quarterback. Seems like he might be a little difficult to work with. I'm not sure that there's going to be like a dozen teams lining up to blow up their whole quarterback plan and give you their next two first-round picks. There might be some, but I don't know that it's going to be a huge number.
Drop the mic.
Orlovsky,
drop the mic,
your turn.
Thrown in there.
I thought I went easy on it.
I'm going to be the voice of reason here. Okay, if the Packers trade him to an NFC team, that would be grounds for firing Dan Graziano's best friend, Brian Gutekunst. Not for just trading Aaron Rodgers, but keeping him
definitely
in conference.
Homeboy.
He ain't going to an NFC football team. Okay?
Where did that come
Number
from?
Two, Jamal Adams went for two ones last year. Aaron Rodgers is going to go for more than what Jamal Adams went for last year.
The Rams still don't have first-round
picks. Carson Wentz just basically went for a first-round pick and a third-round pick, and obviously Aaron's worth more than just one more first-round pick. So looking at the 16 teams in the AFC, because when you trade for Aaron, the question is, do we have a young player at the position that we're really high and confident on and we believe in? Because that's where the Browns exit the conversation. The Browns wouldn't just be taking all those picks and trading for Aaron Rodgers, they would also be saying, we're moving on from Baker Mayfield. And I believe that Baker Mayfield's a quarterback for the Browns that can win them a Super Bowl. So if you look at the teams in the AFC that can answer, it can actually go, we don't have a young quarterback that we believe in and we're willing to roll the dice, it's Denver and it's the Raiders. Those are the only two teams, because Miami's a little bit of a fringe team still with Tua Tagovailoa. Denver and the Raiders are the two teams that you could sit there and say, that is an absolute no-brainer upgrade at the quarterback spot.
All right, so let's live in the Denver world here for a second, because I think you can look at that roster and say they really may be a quarterback away from a Super Bowl. Graz, I'll start with you here. Is Aaron Rodgers' age at all a factor here? He's 37 years old. I realize there's Tom Brady, but no one's thinking everyone's going to be Tom Brady and play that long. You think teams are like, are we really going to give up this much to get somebody who's 37 despite his talent?
Yeah, it's definitely a factor. I mean, you've got to, even if you think he's got 3 or 4 years left, to Orlovsky's point, you know, you have Tua Tagovailoa, right? You think he's got 15 years left.
Yeah.
So you have to make that calculation. The Denver Broncos obviously are in a situation where their quarterback room is in flux, and they might take a chance if they feel like they're Aaron Rodgers away from a Super Bowl. But you better be right, because it's going to be a long time before you pick in the first round again.
All right, yeah, this story's not going anywhere, so we got a lot more to talk about with that. But today is the only day we can talk about this. One more thing before we go. Dan Orlovsky has apparently been whipping up some guacamole at home. You see it there. This one struck me because Dan is a guy, if you don't know, he's a bland guy. He doesn't like any spice. Marcus, right? You're making a face like you think it looks disgusting, but I thought it had more flavor.
It's probably not good.
Look, you
good
think?
Fudge. It's probably not good.
Marcus,
I don't like. I don't like guacamole.
You probably,
that
you probably
looks
don't
like
because
guacamole.
It's Orlovsky.
Hold on.
Wait. You don't like guacamole?
First of all, I'm not a bland guy, Ruddy.
No.
I'm not a bland guy. This is what I put in it, RC. I put Avi's. I put a little bit of salt, just a little bit less pepper,
bland.
A squirt of lime juice. One sweet onion.
That's very bland.
Tomato finely chopped.
Hey,
dial up the lime in
America
your guac.
That's
the key,
paste.
If you ask me. Maybe some extra pepper, too. We'll see you tomorrow.
That's green.
That's terrible.
Thick as a shoe sole.